You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Embodied People. This is Sarah Donahue, and I am sitting here across the country from Colleen Wall. We're on our little recording here, and I'm super excited for today's episode because I get to ask Colleen some questions. So welcome, Colleen.
Hi, Sarah. I'm excited and sort of nervous to do this with you today.
Yeah, so Colleen interviewed me last week, and it just felt like a gift. Like, I was a little nervous too. And then by the end of it, I was like, that was like a little gift to get to like kind of reflect on my moving life. And so that's kind of my plan for you, is to gift you yourself. So Colleen she wears so many hats. I was like jotting down stuff about Colleen. I was like, wow, this is like never ending. Truly. She's done so much, continues to do so much. She is currently the director of Integrated Movement Studies and my colleague there, which is amazing. We certified together in the program in 2006, and she's been teaching with them for a long time, and now she's moved into the director role, which is amazing. Colleen is also an assistant professor of dance at Alfred University in Alfred, New York, which I got to visit this past summer. So I love like having this perspective of your life from having been there and also like around the area where you grew up, which is, yeah, I just love having that in my mind. She's also an author. She wrote Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies. There's more to that title. I'm sorry. And do you want to say the rest of it?
Contemporary Applications.
There it is. And she's working on a second edition that's going to have quite a bit more added to it, which is amazing. Yeah, she has two master's degrees, a bachelor's degree. She's a personal trainer. She's got all sorts of certifications and just keeps going. And I feel like truly like you're one of these people who, we spent like 2 weeks together this summer teaching the IMS work. And it was just like these like stories would come out and be like, what? Like you did that, you did that, you did that. So thing like lots of physical activity that I want to like, I'm so interested in diving into more. Colleen teaches like boxing, and she's a swimmer, and she jumped up on some water skis while I was there and has been climbing a lot. And you used to play football.
And I used to play football before I was a dancer. She's a super jock.
Yeah. So much happening there. So that's the like, and I'm sure I left out a lot of things. Oh, I did. One thing I wanted to add was that you do, do you call it fabric arts?
Fiber arts.
Yeah. So knitting, when we jumped on Zoom, she was like busily knitting away. There's this like beautiful weaving behind her right now. That's probably something you created. So a whole other way of moving that feels like very opposite of boxing to me. So I'm interested in that connection as well. Okay. But here, do you want to add anything else before we go?
Just thank you. That was, I that was a lot to think about. Yes, I am, and I think generally I'd say I'm active in life.
Yes, I would say that too. Yep, kind of from the morning till you go to bed, just kind of
Yeah.
moving and going. Okay, I don't know. I'm putting you on the spot with this one. I'm wondering about if you can reach back and gather your earliest movement memory and what that is, and how, like, from this point now, how that might have been meaningful for you, or that is it is your, because of course you moved before you had memory, but if you can come up with your earliest movement memory.
My earliest movement memory, I think, I feel that there are two, and one may be from a photo. So I'm not sure if I have the memory of my body or if I saw the photo or if the photo brought back the memory, but I have a memory of being in a yellow, like fuzzy onesie, clinging to a warm vacuum cleaner. Like I was sitting on top of the metal vacuum cleaner and it was warm, and the floor and my house where I grew up, my was cold, and I remember seeing my feet crossed around the warm metal of the vacuum cleaner. And so that's a very clear memory of feeling, feeling the warmth in my feet, like maybe pressing into the vacuum cleaner and wrapped around each other, one foot on top. But I have seen a photo of that, but I do remember the warmth of that vacuum cleaner. And then my other youngest memory that involves movement was I had these Snoopy Velcro shoes. I don't know how old I was. I would guess I was 4, maybe. And my parents, the year before I was born, bought a Catholic church that still had pews in it and renovated it into a home where I grew up and they still live. And I remember painting the wall of what would be my bedroom. So they had to do all these renovations. Everything was being renovated, sort of for much of the time. But I remember putting yellow paint on a roller on the wall. And I think my dad even made me like a small kiddie roller. And I remember the physical satisfaction of bridging my body to the wall and putting paint on it and feeling like it stayed. And I remember feeling like that I was doing something useful. That's how I would describe it as an adult. And that felt really cool to be participating and doing something useful.
I love that. Those are both so vivid. And particularly the first one, like the vacuum cleaner one, it makes me think about how I feel like you're very tuned into sensation. Like when I think about you, I think about you like being lots of times in this like sensing world where you're like, you know, whether it's like you're eating something and like really tasting it, or you're just like hearing something or whatever. Like, I feel like sensation is like a big inroad for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that like feeds your work now, or your teaching, or your life?
Yeah, that's so interesting that you say that. I wonder if that was always the case, and I'm not sure how much of that is something that I have cultivated over time. But I actually want to go back to when I was an undergraduate student, and one of the very seminal early things that I did was I did an honors thesis, and I went to a college called Hobart William Smith, and it was a college that was very like kind of rigorous in terms of its honors process at the time. And my honors advisor was Cadence Whittier, who was a late director of integrated movement studies and was one of Sarah and I's teachers, one of our teachers. And I de decided, I'm not entirely sure where the idea came from, but I decided to create a model for creativity based on the moving body. And I wanted this model to guide me if I was like, I think at some point on some level, I thought that I was going to be a teacher, but that wasn't quite formed yet in me as an idea. But I was having experiences that were very where it was very clear to me that what I was doing in movement as a dancer, studying the Laban work at the undergraduate level, also this sort of was at the same time I was a student at Integrated Movement Studies, but they weren't necessarily deliberately over like overlapping. But in that model for creativity, or but in that model, I was like very aware that the moving experiences I was having were changing me in a way that was very generative. It was like very creative. It was so much so that it was kind of like making something that didn't exist, but it was making that something that didn't exist inside of me, or making a version of me that didn't exist prior to what I was experiencing in movement. And so at the foundation of this model is sensation as a body level. Maybe the word is inroad, or like a body level, a foundational level to paying attention to movement in ourselves. And that ultimately it's from sensation that we sow the seeds of anything that becomes change, both in our own perception and our own consciousness and our lives, but also in our moving selves. And so I did develop teaching practices that I applied to other undergrad students, where we practiced attending and attuning to our sensations in a way that those sensations mattered and would be the foundation from which we could propel anything else that happened. And so, yeah, I think that it is something that I became more aware of in that process. I also think that like part of me, as is often a lot of people are like this, but I can be very sensitive in that my sense, like I can be very sensitive to the fabric on my skin. I'm very picky. The texture of a plate can bother me, or the feeling like of paper like can really bother my skin. So, and like sounds overwhelm me very quickly. But that sometimes sensation just it bombards me and it's too much. And so there have been times where I think I really like shut down maybe a lot more quickly than other people, because I get quickly like over racked
Yeah, just like
sensation.
very aware of things, which I always think, when people, okay, so my dentist says this to me almost every time I go, because I'm like squirming in the chair and everything, and he always says, "You're so sensitive," and it's definitely like a derogatory when he says it to me. And then it's like he's like, "Aren't you numb?" And it's like, "Yes, but I also have ears, and I can smell, and like there's a lot of other sensations." And I don't know, I get it, because I feel like that idea of being like hypersensitive, it comes, I think it's like not always a good thing in our society, but it's also, it's just like you're aware of your senses, you're aware of your sensation, and yeah, and what that can lead you to, what sort of like insights that can lead you to.
I think like the over time, like practicing life in an embodied way as we do, I think that I've become so much more grounded in the sensations of my like skin and my muscles and my interior. And that actually helps me feel more grounded and less overwhelmed by the sensations of like smell that can sometimes like pull me out too fast or too far.
So I want to jump to then, because you do boxing and you teach boxing, right?
I do teach boxing.
Yeah. And so I think this was one of those things that when I learned you did that, I was like, what? Like, just kind of surprised. I don't know, you're like a slight human, and just like I was like, oh, boxing. Okay. So I'm curious about the sensation of boxing and like your embodied experience of it, and like what does it do for you in your life? How does it serve you? Why do you keep doing it?
So interesting. I just wrote an article f about this that I think will get published soon. And if it does, I'll put it in the show notes when that happens. But I think that I started boxing like happenstance. I was a personal trainer. One of my colleagues said he wanted to learn some of my touch for repatterning skills, and he would give me boxing lessons in exchange. And when I first started boxing, the feeling of being powerful was profound. Like I could push my feet into the ground and insert my mass into him, and I would get an instant reverberation back through my body of my power, of that insertion into the ground through my core, into my K, back into my guts. And I think on some level that taught me like you're here. Like it activated my sense of my body in the world, like my proprioception almost like smashes all around the space around my body. Like that was like, you're here, you're here, you're here, you're here. Like clashes that was very orienting physically. And at that time, we were boxing. I worked at a gym called Equinox, and it was in public. And so my coworkers, some of my clients saw me doing this. And I think I am slight and petite and sort of have an affect sometimes of a girliness, a lightness. And so to have that strength recognized and seen and celebrated in me at 22 felt so good. Because that's not necessarily a character that I let be as public. And I think that that has carried me through. Now as I'm boxing, I teach a lot. So I've stopped teaching the boxing class at Alfred, and the students teach it and I box with them. And then Alfred State, I teach a boxing class one day a week. So there are two different colleges, both called Alfred, both in Alfred. And for a long time, I was also boxing with a group of people, but that, changes in life have changed that. And I think now it feels like it's a community building experience where we're celebrating power and strength in each other, like we're witnessing it. And there's something and remarkable, I think, about being able to see and receive and celebrate somebody's power and their strength in a way that doesn't. Their strength doesn't, I don't fall apart. So I know I'm strong enough to hold it. And then for them, they also know that it's not necessarily violent or destructive to have that kind of strength and power, but that somebody can take it and celebrate it and wants to nourish it in them. And then that goes both ways. But I love so much being in groups where men and women both. And together, like women punch men, men punch women. I know I'm on the gender binary with this, but like where we can meet and match each other in that way, and celebrate it. It's just, I think it's a place where we get to express something, a charge that if we don't get to express it, it comes out in other ways that actually can be more destructive.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I mean, there's our biases that are like connected to something. I definitely have like biases about that like sort of movement, that forceful, striking, hitting, strong, direct movement that it does equate with violence, and like I don't think I would ever like watch boxing on TV or something. Like I'd be like, oh, gross, like I don't want to see it. I don't want to see people get punched, but it's just like such an interesting way to interact with other people. It's not typical to like it, typically we have, we're polite and we have manners and we don't raise our voices and we, like the ways that we interact with people. But it seems like that's like that must be some sort of necessary like combination of qualities, or like there's some like purpose that it's serving that like these people can interact in this way that's still nonviolent, but has just like a really different sense of energy quality.
Yeah, I think that's like exactly right, Sarah, that these energetic lives and Laban system, we call them effort, but that they have that there's an energetic expression or a range that all humans have access to. And I think in some level, like are entitled to. It's like a birthright. And over time we do get associations clustered with them. And that might make something taboo or a place we can't go. And I think one of the things that's been so rich for me about studying the Laban work is that we can create new associations with these efforts and these energies such that they can be that we can reframe them so they have a potency that we can use and work with. So we're not like relegating them to shadow or something that we can't handle. I will say, well, yeah, I will say, I think that was one of the reasons early on that I was even attracted to the Lawan work, is that I grew up an athlete, as you said, or like playing sports. And then I started dancing when I was a teenager. And I always felt like I danced like an athlete. And at the same time, I felt like I played sports like a little bit like a dancer. And when I got to college and met, although it had been part of my dancing before, but really met what the Laban work was, it was like a way of looking at movement that allowed them both to be there and to both to be true. And it was like I didn't have to like compartmentalize one or the other, but that I could study my experiences of movement in a way that was comprehensive and embraced both the dancer and the athlete identities.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I mean, I think about one of the goals that I hold for myself as a dancer and I offer to my students is that you can, excuse me, you can find a range, you can find all effort qualities. Like you can find all of them. You might have preferences, we all do, but really you can tap into anything. You know, you just have to organize it and figure out how to do it. And that just really makes you a versatile dancer, a versatile mover, an expressive human being, all those
Yeah.
things.
As fully as we can, as fully ourselves energetically as we can express.
Yeah. And I'm sure it feels really good to
Yeah. Next time I see you in person, maybe we'll do it.
it. I love it. I want to talk about your climbing because I feel like this is a more recent thing for you. Is that true? Or how long have you been climbing?
Oh yeah. So I climbed once or twice as a kid. And then I climbed for like 9 months when I first moved to New York City in my early 20s. And then I started climbing again when I couldn't box during COVID. And I have been climbing ever since. And yeah, I guess what should I say about climbing? Climbing, when I think about the movement of climbing, and I just taught a workshop on this at the climbing gym where I usually go. One of the things that stands out to me about what's present in the movement of climbing is that it's the yield, push, reach, grasp, pull cycles that we've talked about in the podcast recently. But climbing is the active, conscious, repeated phrasing. Like it highlights the phrasing of yield, push, reach, grasp, pull from one foot through the core to a hand. You grab the hold, you pull yourself up over and over and over again. And I think that climbing is really satisfying, and in part because it's cycling us through those patterns. So, and as adults, we can sit and not have to really yield or push fully, not have to take hold of a lot, not have to pull ourselves through. So that's one of the things I'm really interested in and excited about climbing right now. I also often look around the climbing gym and notice adults laying on the ground next to each other, talking. And I think, oh my gosh, we must really love that. Like there is something about very rarely, minus with my partner, do I lay down next to another adult and have a conversation with them. And I think it feels good to relate to each other as humans on that literally low level. And so I wonder about some of those other parts of the climbing container that are present in movement that are lesser noticed.
Well, I know this is like a lot to kind of explain maybe over a podcast, but so there's this contraption in your studio called the Maverick, and it's a giant metal icosahedron. And the icosahedron is one of the crystalline forms that we use a lot in the Laban system. It kind of gives us an example of like all the different ranges of motion that the human can move through. And there's a lot to talk about with that, so we won't go into it too much. But you spend a lot of time in this thing and around it and on it. And what has that Like, does that relate to climbing? I mean, it seems like you're climbing around on it. But it's also like when I see you sometimes, it's like you're hanging from it, or there's like maybe not as much of the yield push part, or is it, how is that? Because you spent, I know you spend a lot of time on it. So how's that experience of like having this partner, this maverick metal icosahedron, how's that like changed your movement or informed your movement, or what has it done for you?
Oh man, I'm not even sure how to begin answering this. So I will separate it from my hobby of rock climbing in a local gym. The Maverick, I seem to be calling it the ICOS lately, so I may slip and slide between those two different terms. And again, I just this week had a paper published on one part of this, so I will put that in the show notes. The icosahedron was something that years ago I would say I had said to a couple different people, I wish I could get a large metal one to climb on. And I had talked to some students who welded here at Alfred University, but nobody really took me seriously that this would be useful. And I through a very strange connection with Instagram and meeting this guy named Lucas Konecki, he had patented it, and it was like he made my dreams come true, which is what I said to him. And he was like, nobody's, that's such a great thing to hear. But I think that I'm not sure all the ways it's changed me, because I think I'm so very much living the experience of it changing me right now. So it pops through in my consciousness in little ways, but I will share a few that feel ripe and true. The first thing I'll say is that when I'm climbing in there, I often don't remember what's happened. And so I started videoing it so that I could have some record of it. And that's how I started posting things on Instagram. And sometimes I've been putting like text and sound over, and that's been really helpful because it helps me track and remember the over time things that are happening as I'm researching or like training in there. Because otherwise, I think they just slip away as sensations and as like this ephemeral experience. But here are a few things that have I feel conscious of changing. When I feel so much more aware of the body that I'm in being three-dimensional, and I feel sensitive to that in a way that I never have before. So I feel much more present in my backspace. I feel much more the sense of my head being around cathedral-like three-dimensional volume. And then that bubbles out to the space around me, that my sensation of the kinesphere or the movement bubble around me is that it truly is an alive partner. And these are things that theoretically, I had heard and said and taught and wrote in books, but now they are something that I experience and sense all day long. And that is actually feels really good. Like I feel more in my body, more present. So those are a few. Some others is I notice. Well, Janice Meaden, who is one of the founders and a director emeritus of Integrated Movement Studies, she and her husband came out to visit a couple of years ago. And Janice and I had some time in the studio in the ICOS together. And she was really special. But she said, well, why don't you lock off two limbs, release another, and initiate from your core to swing. That's the brachiation pattern. And at first I was scared to do it, but then as I started exploring it, I could feel the inside, the center of me connecting to my limbs more. And so when I do that, and it's still like I have to tell myself to do it, it doesn't come naturally all the time. I do feel a pulsing connection from my like navel center out into space that's really active, and I feel like I can handle more. I can feel more centered in myself. I often leave the studio feeling alert and alive and centered. And I guess the last thing I'll say is I feel that, and this is a little bit more spiritual and personal, but I really feel that the time in there has changed my relationship to my heart. And sometimes I even feel like my heart in my body is in the shape of an icosahedron and like a dice, which an icosahedron is also the 20-sided Dungeons and Dragons dice. But that I can like flip its facings and find different nuances and parts of my heart. And I used to feel like my heart was really flat in my body, and now it feels huge and three-dimensional, like there's multiple entry points. And that similar thing has happened in my center of gravity in my pelvis. And you know, that's in the paper that I just wrote, I feel like that's changed or translated into my relationships, intimate and more general. And yeah, I feel like it's changing me inside and out. And then students come in and who go in there say things like, yeah, you know, I feel like it's a refresh or just a wash for the whole of me. And
It's so amazing. It's yeah, I'm glad to hear you talk about it because I've kind of seen from afar you playing in it and knowing that there's a lot going on in the play that you're when you're in there. And I just always think like we are creatures. We're little creatures also, and you know, you put a creature into like a little square aquarium and it's going to move a certain way, and you put a creature in a chair and it's gonna like move that way, or you know, stick a computer in front of a creature and that's gonna influence your movement. And so just thinking about like being in and around this, yeah, this like 20-sided form and negotiating it physically and like what your brain must be doing also, like you talk about your heart and your pelvis, you know, finding three-dimensionality and just thinking about the connections your brain is making as an adult, you know, like I could see kiddos in there just like going to town and it's part of their forming process. But like, as an adult, how it must be really just like keeping your movement, like as like all of the possibilities that are there. You're like finding them daily.
Yeah, I feel like that's true. And like I'm finding it, like I'm feeling it in my body. So my nervous system and my proprioceptive system, but my eyes are doing it. My head is going off balance. So there's a vestibular activation. And I know that Lucas, who with Grayson patented the ICOS or the Maverick, he works with concussions. And there's a place also in Provo, Utah, Andy Clower, called and Cognitive Effects are also using the Maverick for ICOS and the ICOS for concussions. And I didn't know that really. I didn't get that when I went out to Wisconsin to meet Lucas the first time. But I had in college had a really severe concussion, and I've had quite a number of them, mostly actually not from football, but from things like dancing and goofing off. And Lucas was able to work with me with some of my lingering concussive symptoms, because that was about 20 years ago, in a way that I haven't been needing to wear my glasses since. But then since getting that ICOS here that I train in here in Alfred, yeah, I haven't had tension headaches. I feel like my ability to focus is so enhanced. My ability to like shift gears towards what's n needed of me now and needed of me now is enhanced. And I really do feel like that's happening on some level because of how the icosahedron is training my brain and my attention and training me to put my hands and my feet and my eyes where they need to be to, yeah.
So cool. Yeah, maybe you can post a little like video of just so people can, if they haven't seen what we're talking about, they can get an idea of it. Because
Yeah, I will. Yeah, it's pretty trippy, for
that's another
sure.
thing to like do it. We had a little mini experience a couple summers, or when was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, just getting in it for just like a minute or two is I know what you mean by that, like losing a sense of what's happening. You just kind of, it's like a different realm.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're Students get to play in it as well, I'm assuming, because it's sitting in one of your studios. I want to just because you teach dance. You're a dancer. You teach movement. You have this group of students at Alfred, and I think they have like kind of like a varied background is like what I've gathered. Alfred's a very special place. It's kind of a magical place that I can just, and I wasn't, when I was there, I didn't really meet any of the students, but I can just kind of like imagine like, students who come to Alfred to learn. What are like beyond like the technique or whatever it might be, like what do you think are some of the most important like takeaways that you would hope your students leave with, like after studying with you, after being in the studio, after being in the Maverick, maybe like what are some like big things about movement or about being embodied or sensation that you would be like, I hope they leave with that.
I think, I think on the first level, like students talk about life hacks by Colleen, which is like ways to attend to their bodies to make their lives easier, to make it like less daunting to take out the trash, to help your body like move you with ease into what you need to be doing. But that one feels like maybe not as rich to me. But it does happen. And I remember feeling the magic of that. Like, wow, I just felt so drained and tired. And now that I've had that class or that experience or that person's hands on me, it's like suddenly something totally new is possible for me for the rest of the day. So I also don't want to diminish that. But I think that the bigger thing that I would hope that they leave with is a version of caring about what I call, or we call at IMS, embodied knowing, and that there's a knowledge and wisdom that can be gleaned from paying attention to one's moving experiences and moving process. And we do this all day, sort of automatically as people who are alive, but so much of it happens at a pre-verbal level, and then it becomes things like a like it reveals itself in our language and in our relationships, but that we can, and that they have some skill, some knowledge of attending to their bodies and their movement in a way that there's a wisdom and a knowing that can help guide the decisions of their lives. And then instead of saying, well, I can't move forward, or like I'm feeling like this is a really big struggle, and thinking that they might be crazy or that there's something wrong with them, that there actually may be something on a level of the body, of the tissue knowing that's like asking them to pause and go slower. Or yeah, the feeling of like when you really insert your mass, like some strong weight, and like lower through the core, through to upper, and like you really are able to move and push through something, and the satisfaction and gratification that comes with that, like knowing that that is something to pursue and seek out at times, and to not hold back in life from like sometimes the heavy push and the work, and because they felt that it's safe to do that in their body. So I think that there's yeah, I would say that an embodied knowing, and then I think the last piece of that is that the experiences that they've had, because they, as time and life marches on, I think the experiences that we have sometimes in dance or movement training, like they go away. Like you get hungry again, you need another meal, but they were real. I hope that there's something that's tangible enough in that they have changed them.
It's awesome. Lucky students.
Yeah, thanks. And actually, one out of nowhere texted me today. I'm going to read her text. It was so funny and perfect. This comes from Courtney Sisson, and I haven't heard from her for a while. And she wrote, "So last night my leg was throbbing and hip pain for hours, and then I massaged the arch of my foot, and all of it magically disappeared. I don't know why. I felt like I need to tell you, but probably because if I didn't know you, I might blame Jesus."
So perfect.
So funny. It's so, it made me laugh so hard.
man, those are the best. Like the little, like out of nowhere, a little thank you from a student. Oh, that's so great.
So great, so funny too.
Okay, I have one more question for you. Well, I have a
Yes.
lot more, but I guess I'll just pick one more. So looking forward in your life, gosh, you know, I feel it's like, how's that possible that we are kind of in the middle of our lives right now? Because when Colleen and I met, we were in like the quarter. We were at the quarter, probably.
We were in our early 20s.
So now we're at the, now we're in the middle, which is kind of, it's an okay place to be. But like looking forward into like the crystal ball, what do you see yourself doing? Like moving, how, like what activities or what will you be doing? What will you, how will you be moving? How will you be engaging with the world? And maybe some of the things you do now or some other things, say like, let's go like 40 years down the road, 30 or 40 years down the road. What do you, I don't know. I've never even thought about this question for myself, so I'm giving you a hard time.
I'm just gonna say what first comes to mind. And some of it is short term. Man, I really want more days where I get to fully attend to my writing. It's funny, I love moving so fully, but I find that the writing is what helps me make sense out of it and sort it out. And more, you know, in writing that first book, it was sort of anticlimactic, and all I could think about was the typos. But I increasingly hear that it's impacted people and been really useful, and that's an interesting nudge that I didn't expect 5 years later. And so that is also helping me see that there's value not just for me, but for other people, and sitting down and writing from my moving experience. So I do want to be doing that, which is funny, like to be sitting. Here we are talking about moving, but sitting and writing my moving experience, offering it. Another thing is, I have been doing this, and I want to do so much more of it. But I did one last year, and I'll two of them kind of, and then I'll do one this June. But these workshops and or retreats that involve movement, the natural landscape of the place I'm at, and the creative process. So it is a bit of bridging back to that early creative model for creativity based on the body, working through the body, usually in the morning for a couple hours, and then something out to nature that has a connection to what we did in the morning. And then open time to use what's coming up and through the body to guide whatever project people bring, and they bring their own. So I'm doing one of those in Maine. I did one in Maine last year, and a version of one in Korea. And so I want to be doing a lot more of that too. That started like years ago. I really had this inkling that I needed to set up somatic practices for myself where I went out to nature and connected to nature. And it took me a little while. I had to get divorced and stuff to figure out how to do that. And actually, that connects to boxing. And I'll, you know, okay, I will just say this is my good friend and colleague, our colleague Aida Curtis. I've talked to her about a lot of these ideas, but early on in COVID, I remember trying to box my ex-husband, and she was like telling her how frustrating it was that we would like couldn't punch each other, and that he seemed to get mad at me every time I did that. And she was somehow she in our conversation. The impression came back to me like, that's not going to work. Like, I can't be with somebody that I can't celebrate my physical strength. I can't hold that. It will only gets mad at me. And that also could, there's a connection to climbing in there also. But I think that yeah, at the same time, I was like, I need to connect with nature, and I need to create somatic and embodied practices that go deeper than walking and are more creative for me, and getting sort of the messages and the meaning. So I think when I'm 80, I hope I'm still doing that. And right now I love teaching dance, and I love making dances. But I've changed so much as a teacher that I don't have any sense of what that will look like, because it's just, I'm changing so much as a dance teacher. So yeah, but I hope I'm really exuberant in 40 years.
I have a feeling you will be.
It's easy to say that, but I really do. I hope I can still push my feet hard into muddy earth and enjoy it and like feel my mass like dropping into the earth's core and like push from there.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I think coming from where you are now, you know, and being so aware of yourself in your skin, around your skin, like just having that as like a as a foundation. Yeah, and it's hard to say, like age and years, you know, change us, but I think also what you just said, like I've changed so much as a teacher. I was like, well, good, you know, like you have to, and it's, you know, the essence of life is change, and we like we have to change, so being ready for that, I think, yeah, your awareness of it, I think, will like keep you ready for it. And I'm sure there'll be some things that you're like, well, I didn't know that I would also do fire spinning, but I took it up when I was 75.
I mean, I really want to make jewelry and
Colleen, this has been such a pleasure. You're incredible. I admire you in so many ways, and truly, like it's, I think of our like first encounters together. One of our very first encounters was we were doing doggy paddling races. Even though Colleen can like fully swim, and I'm not much of a swimmer, we were like little like doggy paddle across the pool. Just playful. You've always been so playful, and I think you'll be playful when you're 80 also. So
thanks, Sarah. I really enjoyed doing this with you today. It was really meaningful. Thank you.
all right. Thanks, lady.
Yep.